James, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's a very important and very interesting time that we're living through right now, so it's good to be here with this opportunity to talk to people about it.
Well, why don't you go ahead and just bring us up to date on what's going on from your point of view, but I'm sure what's taking place in the Middle East over there with the full support of the Turkish government, try to mobilize all of the economies of the Middle East together to have some sort of a stable currency. I'm sure that this is going to eventually have an impact on the whole world monetary system. You pick up your story at what you think is going on.
Well, I think you're right. There's a lot of different forces that are coming together to try to put together some sort of alternative to the current monetary paradigm, specifically the U.S. dollar as the reigning world reserve currency. And I think there has been a lot of pressure on this for some time, and I think that the political movement behind this is growing. But it's still always, as always, it's a question of what can possibly really viably replace the U.S. dollar at this point. And at this point, there really isn't that kind of alternative that would be able to replace what the U.S. dollar does in terms of its world reserve currency status. And until there is some sort of viable alternative in place, I don't think we're likely to see a changeover. But that inflection point continues to draw nearer and nearer, and of course now with this this big shutdown brouhaha that's brewing in Congress right now, we are seeing once again the U.S. dollar is taking a bit of a hit, and the euro is also taking a bit of a hit as there's some political turmoil happening in Italy right now, and this is benefiting, for example, the yen and the franc. But again, it's still just this horse race between various currencies in which the U.S. dollar has a very commanding and very demanding lead, which doesn't seem to be fading anytime soon. So I think that there is a growing international consensus that there does need to be some sort of alternative to the current paradigm, but I don't think that has really coalesced yet.
Well, basically, of course, the thing is there has to be something behind money. You can't just create nothing. Not indefinitely, you can't create turning out $85 billion of money every month, and probably a lot more than money we just don't know about. We know that they've had something like $16 trillion to all across the world in 2008, and they kept it a secret. Everything is done in secret. The last thing they want is for the public to learn the truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon is James Corbett, and James is over in living in Japan, giving us an internationalist outlook on what's going on. Of course, James is a Canadian, and so basically, of course, his feelings on what's going on are very, very similar to ours, but he can give you sort of the attitude of what's going on from the Japanese point of view, from the European point of view, and points of view that you will never hear openly discussed. Certainly here in the United States, he was just saying that Italy is having a terrible problem. Certainly they're basically, their debt is, a couple of time is a double what the gross domestic product is. What's really going on in Italy and Greece and all those southern European countries? So Greece created these massive debts that can never be repaid. And working with a currency that certainly does not allow them the freedom to get out of the mess they're in. What's really going on from your point of view?
Well, we should keep in mind where the real roots of this crisis come from, and we have to look back at the time when Greece actually entered the Eurozone. With the help of Goldman Sachs, which helped to cover up some of its actual real worries that were there on its balance sheets at the time. And this has since come out that Goldman Sachs was instrumental in getting the Greece into the Eurozone by helping them to cover up and paper up some of their outstanding debts and things of that nature at the time. So there was a lot of, well, financial sleight of hand, let's say, to make sure that Greece got into the Eurozone in the first place when it really shouldn't have by the Eurozone's own standards. But of course, this is the exact problem of the regional currency and the drive to try to get everyone on board and involved with this regional currency project that the Eurozone is that they've always been willing to bend and manipulate their own rules in order to shoehorn some of these countries into the mix and to get them as part of the fold. And we're starting to see, well, we've been seeing the effects of it for years now, and we're starting to see where this is really ultimately leading. And in some ways, I think that this is a good thing. Obviously, it's a horrible thing for those who are living through this turmoil that this is causing as Greece, for example, slips further and further into just that insurmountable debt that will require the never-ending black hole of bailouts until basically Europe gives up on it. And now we're seeing Italy devolving into political mayhem, which is causing even further economic mayhem. So that is a very volatile situation. And again, this isn't good for any of the people who are living through it, but at the very least, it does provide the case precedent that the regional currency idea that the euro represented and which seemed this inevitable march.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. James is just saying that certainly the countries of southern Europe are having a terrible time, specifically Greece, Italy, all of these countries. They never should have gone into this common currency. But everything has been a lie. Goldman Sachs, the other major banks, coverage of this. The last thing they wanted was for the truth to come out that these socialist countries cannot join together with free enterprise countries. And basically the reason they can't is because, of course, you can't generate enough money to provide all of these wonderful utopian socialist programs and people to be able to retire at 60 or 58 years of age with comfortable pensions and free medical care and all of these wonderful benefits. And then when the day of reckoning comes, and it's coming in Greece, and basically they're talking 25-27% unemployment, 60% unemployment for the youth people are leaving Greece, and the whole system is beginning to crumble there. And we're not hearing it here in the United States any more than we're hearing about the crisis in Italy, because the media is controlled and they're largely able to control what the American people think and believe. James, you go ahead and tell us what's really going on and where is this all going to end up. Certainly you have to have a stable monetary system if you're going to have a stable society, unless of course they want an unstable society to justify implementation of dictatorship.
Well, unfortunately, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. And again, this is something that a lot of people have been pointing out in the alternative media for some time now, is that as the euro begins to further collapse and this crisis begins to mount, of course, that, as always, provides the powers that shouldn't be with their excuse for coming in and trying to wrest even more control and power out of the hands of this crisis. So we have seen over the past few years the European Central Bank growing in importance as the euro threatens to go up in flames. And we've seen the European Central Bank chief, Mario Draghi, growing in powers as he basically becomes the administrator of more and more bailout and emergency funds and different types of emergency institutions that have been set up in the wake of this. And just like in every other case, the more power that is given to a government agency or to a central bank or what have you, in the time of crisis, the more power will remain when that crisis, if that crisis ever subsides. So I think what we're seeing here is, rather than the eurozone simply going up in flames and disintegrating as it probably should, and returning to the national currencies so that each country can solve its own problems in its own way, what we're probably seeing and what we're going to continue seeing from here on out is a growing consolidation of power in the wake of this, which is, of course, the exact opposite of what I think needs to happen. But they're going to justify this by saying, well, this hasn't worked so far, so we need more and more power. And we're starting to see that more and more signs of that. We're seeing, for example, the European Central Bank and Mario Draghi are now saying that the stability fund that's been set up, the $500 billion that they're playing with as an emergency bailout fund, isn't enough. And now they need a permanent fund basis for the bailouts that they're doing in Europe. So we're starting to see them trying to claw more and more power out of the jaws of this crisis, exactly as they always do, because of course the real motto of the New World Order is order out of chaos, and that is the name of the game, and they are creating the chaos from which they are going to sow the seeds of their New World Order.
And of course, they create the chaos because they want a dictatorship, and this is really what it's all about. Ever more power to the bureaucracy. Now, we know certainly that the Federal Reserve System is providing all sorts of money. Certainly, the American Central Bank is providing all sorts of money to the European Central Bank, but do we have any idea how much? We know that they gave them something like $16 trillion back in 2008. We don't know how much has been repaid. We really don't know much of what's going on. Everything seems to be secret. because us common folks, we're just not smart enough to understand these wonderful things these elite certainly are planning. And of course, situations like this always end up in war. If you go back through history, and whenever you have a financial crisis, it's followed by a war. And that is exactly, of course, what that's certainly working at today. And an awful lot of people, perhaps hundreds of millions, will die. Maybe just millions will die. We don't know. But we're living in a very unstable situation. How much money do we have? Any idea how much money the Federal Reserve, the Central Bank of America, is funneling over to Europe today?
There are various indications of that, and you are right that trillions of dollars have been provided via the bailout mechanisms that were put in place after 2008, and I don't have those specific figures in front of me, so I can't break it down for you, but again, hundreds of billions of dollars to various banks in Europe, and adding it all up, it does run into the trillions. So we do know that incredible amounts of money have been spent recapitalizing European banks. And this is at least supposedly justified by the idea that we are now living in this global economy in which, well, if the European banks start to collapse and if the Eurozone goes up in flames, that will affect the U.S. economy as well. So this is the type of globalist system that they've steeped us in. And I think you're right. Exactly as they build up the socialist welfare state in order to get people hooked on it so that if there's ever a crisis, they can just claim more and more power, so too that they build up these regional governments and regional currencies so that when they start to fail, again, they can claim more and more power and spend more and more of the American taxpayer dollars bailing out Europe, which is a ridiculous idea on its face, but this is the new normal of the paradigm we're living in these days.
Well, of course, the thing is that certainly with the Federal Reserve System creating all of this new money, and apparently the banks have about $1.8 trillion that they've been given, and they're being paid interest not to put this in the economy, because if they put it into the economy, that $1.8 trillion would lead to massive inflation. So rather than have that happen while we're paying the banks interest to keep this money, which they've gotten at very low rates, and the banks are making out. But, of course, what's happening to the people, and basically the costs are going, prices are going up. They tell us we have 1 or 2% inflation. And then, of course, but the only people who believe that are the people who never go to the store. The prices, you go to the store, the costs are really going up, certainly at a phenomenal rate, and certainly the price of homes is going up again. Where do you see this all ending up, James?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I think that this is going to come to that crisis point from which, once again, I think they're going to try to snatch their victory from the jaws of seeming defeat. And I think it's really up to the American people, the people of the world, that when and if this crisis arises, and of course, I think we're already living through the early stages of it, but once it hits home, I think people really have to reject the idea that the government is going to come along and be our saviors in this crisis. And if you only give us a little bit more power and a little bit more money, then everything will be solved. And I think we have to realize that they are the ones who are creating this crisis as we speak. And in order for them to gain more power out of it, they have to convince us that they are the saviors. Well, I think we have to identify them as the perpetrators of this, the crimes that are going on right now, and the crimes that led us to the brink of worldwide global meltdown in 2008, and the ongoing crisis that's been happening since then. And once we do identify them as the criminals, then we will be less inclined, hopefully, to give them the reins of political power in the wake of the coming collapse.
But of course, as we look and see what's going on today, we're in many straits even worse shape than we were in 2008. We do know that Brazil, the so-called BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa are thinking of an alternative currency system. I had a friend of mine just came back from Istanbul, where he was giving a talk, and all the leaders of all the Muslim nations there in the Middle East were there. The financial leaders were there. They're talking about creating a new system independent of the dollar, and certainly if the dollar was to be dropped as the financial medium of the world, what impact would that have on us, the savings of the average individual, the life savings, the pension, the annuity, the monetary system here in America? If other countries began turning away from the dollar and began to establish, and basically what they were talking about in Istanbul last week was a monetary system, a new monetary system, with at least a tacit dependence upon gold and silver as a foundation because there's no instance in all history where a nation has turned against gold and silver as a foundation where that monetary system has survived. And they're talking about this in the Middle East. Certainly the BRIC nations are talking about it. We hear similar rumors out of South America as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, to answer the question of what would happen if the dollar was replaced as a world reserve currency, one of the main benefits of having a world reserve currency is that you can continue to print as much debt as you could ever need, and people will continue to buy it because there is always a need for the world reserve currency. So the U.S. government has had the privilege of being able to continue printing out more and more and more and more and more and more debt, and now up to $16.7 trillion, and likely in the coming days going to raise that debt limit once again, and people will continue to buy the U.S. government debt because, again, the U.S. dollar is always in demand. But if the world reserve currency were to shift over to some other type of basket of currencies or some gold-backed currency or what have you, then the U.S. dollar would lose that status, and the demand for the U.S. dollar would completely drop off, and it would make it so that it would be theoretically possible for the U.S. government to hold debt auctions of treasury bills and no one to show up, no one to become buyers, which would be a very interesting turn of events and would be really the beginning of the end of the current American monetary and government paradigm. So
there's pretty much going on today, as certainly as the Federal Reserve, our central bank, is putting out $55 billion, at least $40 billion of that is every single month, to buy treasury bonds. And how much of the other treasury bonds? Other countries are certainly buying. How much of it is being secretly bought by our own central bank? I mean, this is the question. Certainly, there's an awful lot of T-bills that are being sold every single. We're talking about $1 trillion worth of T-bills to cover simply our debt, and then all the other debts. And we really don't know how much debt the Federal Reserve is buying, do we? Really, all we know is they admit to 40 or 45 billion. But what about all the other? What are they doing secretly behind the scenes? Do you have any idea?
Well, I mean, we can only speculate about what's happening in secret, but the point is that the Federal Reserve doesn't buy the Treasury bills directly from the Treasury. That would be monetization of the debt. What they do is they buy it in the secondary markets. So there still has to be that primary market actually buying from the Treasury in the first place in order for the Fed to buy off of the secondary markets. So,
my telephone number is 1-888-24-Liberty. 1-888-24-Liberty or 464-8295. You have a question or comment? Ladies and gentlemen, we're, I believe, on the edge, the very edge of a major cataclysmic event in the financial world.
Let us all be grateful.
James, well, certainly what's going on over in Japan at the present time? I said Japan is having real problems. My understanding is they're actually increasing the level of the amount of currency in circulation, and believing, of course, that they can drive down the value of the currency where they can certainly then stimulate their economy. But when they do that, don't they undermine the life savings of the Japanese people? Won't this have a profound impact upon, the pensions and annuities and the bonds and certainly the value of the yen?
It absolutely will, but we're starting to see the other shoe beginning to drop. What we're seeing actually coming out later today here in Japan, it's already Tuesday for us across the dateline, and what is going to happen later today is the Prime Minister is going to table a budget that is going to call for an increase in the sales tax here from 5% to 8% in April of next year. And this will be the first significant step in almost two decades to do anything to try to rein in the current runaway public debt, which is now over $10.18 trillion, which is, relative to the Japanese economy, is much, much higher than the $16.7 trillion is to the American economy, somewhere over 200 and I believe, 50% now of GDP. So just an incredible amount of debt. So they're going to be raising the consumption tax, I think, in the vain hope that this is going to somehow stimulate the economy or stimulate, at the very least, sentiment, market sentiment to, oh, the government is going to do something about reining in the debt. I think that's a pretty counterproductive move. I don't think raising taxes is really the solution to this, but it's what's going to happen later today, and I'm sure that the press is going to laud him for it, exactly as they did about all of the measures in the so-called Abenomics, including that expansion of the Japanese yen monetary base that you were talking about, which so far has just had a token effect on the markets of basically expanding consumer spending on the hopes that this will stimulate the economy. But I don't think we've seen any real fundamental underlying boost to the economy out of this so far. And exactly as you say, all this is ultimately going to do is erode the savings of the Japanese people, increasingly more and more of whom are, of course, aging and retiring. So that's really a very dangerous game that's being played right now, because, of course, so many people are relying on their bonds, which they have been buying and buying into for decades and decades, to support them in their retirement. And here comes the Japanese government to completely undermine the value of those bonds.
And basically, of course, when you raise taxes, what it means is certainly people do not have the money to spend. And then the other thing is that people will be loath to spend money because, of course, certainly they're going to have to pay taxes when they buy things. So I would think this would be totally counterproductive. Certainly you stimulate the economy by lowering taxes, not by raising taxes. Don't they understand the fundamentals of economics?
Apparently not. Apparently they're trying to rewrite the rule books, and I agree with you completely. I think that this is a completely counterproductive move, especially in an economy where you would think they would be trying to boost internal domestic demand to try to make up for the problems that they have with their exports.
Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and James is saying that the later today in Japan, which of course is Tuesday over there, they're going to announce that they're going to raise the sales tax from 5% to 8%. Now, what does that do? Well, it means, of course, number one, people will have less money to spend, certainly in the economy, because it'll be going out in taxes, so it'll cut back certainly on purchases and tend to slow the economy down. The second thing it would do is certainly when people know that they're going to have to pay higher taxes, they're not going to buy things as readily because, of course, the money's going to be simply taken away from them. When you want to stimulate the economy, you cut taxes. I mean, this is well known to anybody who understands economics. But, of course, the people running the government over in Japan don't understand economics. They think that certainly they're going to stimulate the economy by raising taxes, by actually taking money away from the people and trying to get back. Because, remember, their debt over there is almost 250%. 250% of the gross domestic product of that country. And down the line, of course, as interest rates go up, why, this is eventually going to break the back of the economy. Certainly between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. There are certain rules in economics. And one thing is, if you want to increase certainly an economy, you lower taxes. And they want to increase the economy in Japan. They're raising taxes. And I think James shares my concern, or I share his concern. This is going to lead to disaster. I mean, certainly Japan has been in sort of a modified recession. What is it, 20 years, something like that?
Yes, we're heading into, I think, about the 23rd year or so of this ongoing just stagnation of the economy. And again, they're trying to grow their way out of it simply by expanding the monetary base, which I don't think is going to work. And increasing taxes, which again, I don't think is going to work. But to a certain extent, they're being pressured to do so by the ratings agencies like Standard & Poor that are threatening to downgrade the Japanese debt if they don't do something to, quote unquote, rein in the budget deficit. So, of course, they have to start raising taxes. And I guess it's akin to what we see in the Eurozone with the bailout money being attached to all the austerity measures. And it's obviously of a different nature here in Japan, but I think we can see the parallels. And there is going to have to be a significant cutback on Japanese government services at some point. It's simply unsustainable, the debt that's happening right now. But of course, we also have the 2020 Summer Olympics coming up in Tokyo now in 7 years, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of government spending to be done on that. So it's going to be interesting to see how they start financing that.
but they don't have the money. They're always a losing proposition. It's wonderful to have the Olympics, but when you have to put out all the money and you're not going to get it back again, why? Because you're laying a foundation for all sorts of economic problems. And ladies and gentlemen, the whole world monetary system is based upon a fiat money system. There's nothing behind it, and there's no instance in all history where a fiat money system has existed for any period of time. But don't you worry, they have a plan, in my estimation, and that is when the whole thing collapses, they'll just have a world dictatorship, a one-world government, and that's what they really want. For the last thing they want is, of course, people to understand that these people do not believe in freedom, they believe in rule by an elite, and the elite are there simply waiting for the coming catastrophic events, at least in my estimation. What about yours, James?
No, unfortunately, I very much agree with you. I think that that has always been the plan. I think that's what we're heading towards. And I think we've been steeped in conditioning for that for decades now, and the inevitability that one day there will be this one world government, because that's just the way that we're heading. And the only way that can really arise, the only way we can get from this point A to that point B, is through some sort of crisis. And again, I think that we've been seeing the build up to this crisis for decades in many respects. But of course, certainly in the last few years, we've seen all of the preparations being put in place, and we've seen the precedent happening in places like Europe, as I say, for the European Central Bank and others to gain in power and influence as the crisis continues to grow. And once again, I think that once this really starts hitting the shores of the United States in earnest, I think we're going to see a very similar thing taking place there as well. And obviously, the government is going to pretend to be the savior and is going to propose whatever solutions it proposes and take whatever extra powers it wants to take in the wake of that crisis. So again, I hope that the American people and people all around the world are smarter than that and understand where the true threat is coming from.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And basically, because my concern, ladies and gentlemen, is most people don't understand the financial crisis. We have a friend, his name is Bill Still. He just called him today, and he'll be our guest on Friday. For our program. But Bill was just back from Turkey. He was invited over there by the president of Turkey. If you've never read Bill's books or seen his DVD, the Master Plan, you need to get it. But basically, he says that he addressed all of the monetary leaders, all of the monetary ministers, the whole of that part of the world, and they're going to create a new currency. It's not a matter of if, but when. Well, James, you go right ahead and say, what are the things that you'd think we should be bringing out today for our listeners?
Well, as we alluded to earlier, there's a political crisis unfolding right now in Italy that involves Berlusconi getting some of the members of his party to try to basically break apart the current governing alliance there in Italy. And we've seen some senators trying to break away from Berlusconi and trying to get him to soften his stance and all of this. And so we have this criminal in Italy once again pointing the gun at the head of the government there in Italy. And that's threatening to undermine what's happening there. Very strange type of events that are happening right now. But it is, unfortunately, it's playing out in a way that that threatens to stoke up the flames of the Eurozone crisis once again. So I think that's a pretty important thing to keep our eye on. And as you've talked about today, I mean, I think that the idea of some of the BRIC countries and some of the other developing countries coming together for a currency, an alternative currency proposal, is interesting. But we've also saw in recent weeks the BRICS, or at least the idea that the BRICS might form an alternative internet backbone as an alternate to the U.S. sponsored and created DARPA created system that we're currently on, because of these revelations about NSA spying on the internet, which I think is an interesting proposal and potentially for the good. But of course, you have even people like Glenn Greenwald, who, of course, is the journalist living in Brazil, who's been reporting on the NSA scandal, saying that we have to be equally as suspicious of the Brazilian government or any other government that comes along pretending to be our saviors when it comes to providing internet services. So I thought that was an interesting development that's been happening in recent weeks as well.
Well, I say we're living in very uncertain times, but my concern is that most people really believe it's just a matter of time before things get back to normal. My fear is they're never going to get back to normal. The only normal is when you have a solid currency, and we'll never get back to that without destroying the current currency. And with that will come the impoverishment of the vast majority of the American people. Well, this is Dr. Stan. That guest is James Corbett, and Sydney, James writes for the International Forecaster. And Sydney, James, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get the International Forecaster, how they could certainly get your material as well? And our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question for our guest, James Corbett. But we are living in really frightening economic times because we don't have a stable currency. We have a small group of people, a very small little clique of wicked and the immoral people who control our banking system, who are manipulating this. These people making $30, $40, $50 million a year in incomes at the top, and basically, of course, certainly then lowering the wages and destroying the value of our currency and our pensions, our annuities, for the common people. You have a ruling elite. Well, basically, James, how can people get to you, get your material, get to the International Forecaster, and then, of course, begin to prepare themselves?
Well, the Forecaster is a biweekly e-newsletter on matters economic and social and political and otherwise, and it runs 30 to 40 pages per edition. It comes out Wednesdays and Saturdays, so I think it's a valuable resource for people. If people would like to check out the more information about the International Forecaster, they can go to the website theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And there you can see some of the sample articles written by myself and others, and you can sign up for an introductory copy if it's your first time to subscribe. And of course, you can also just subscribe to the newsletter from there. Or you can write for more details at P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. And if people are interested in my own work, I will direct them to CorbettReport.com. That's, again, all one word, Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. And from there, you'll be able to find links to all of my various audio and video presentations. Again, thousands and thousands of hours of audio and video media that are available for completely free download. So I hope people will use it as a resource in their own research.
Well, what should people be doing at the present time to protect themselves? In other words, how can we certainly benefit from what's going on today, or can we benefit from what's going on today?
There's always ways to benefit. I think it's a question, though, fundamentally, of what we want, what we really want, what kind of benefit we really want. I mean, it's one thing to say that you can benefit from investing in the military-industrial complex or something. You'll never go broke from lending your money to those types of corporations. But of course, that's not, I think, the type of growth that we want, and I don't think that's where we want to be putting our money and our efforts. So I think that the real solution to all of what we see happening right now is to try to work on building up our local communities and businesses in the type of economy that we actually want to see, and supporting those businesses that we actually want to see flourishing. And I think that this happens best and most productively in those situations where we can look the other businessmen in the eye and understand what it is they're doing and see their direct effects on the community around us. Of course, there are ways to collaborate with people across borders and around the world on the internet, and modern technology is making that all possible, so that we are really living in a global village of various of some sort. But I think we have to sidestep the global government ramifications of that and work with, once again, real people in real situations. So I think that it really comes down to investing our money in cooperatives and things that we can actually see the direct benefits of, rather than putting our money in some stock market that may promise us returns in the short term, but I think ultimately is just going to lead us further down that road to enslavement.
All right. right, because my concern is that the people now, basically, who are in bonds, I mean, traditionally, people would go into bonds, and they had security there. But are bonds safe at the present time, Sydney, as far as investing? Because certainly, sooner or later, the interest rates are going to go up. With the interest rates rising, the value of the bonds is going to go down, and there could be a disaster for them. Where can people put their money safely, where they're going to be able to at least maintain some of the value of their life savings?
Well, I think you're exactly right about bonds, especially U.S. Government bonds. They have nowhere to go but down. And this, again, is something that has been admitted by numerous people who have talked about the largest bond bubble in the history of the world has been deliberately inflated in the wake of the collapse of the 2006 housing collapse and the 2008 Lehman collapse. They deliberately went about creating the largest bond bubble in the history of the world. And even the talk of tapering back on that, as we've seen in recent months, has caused the markets to go haywire, so that basically the bonds require this constant input of tens of billions of dollars per month from the Federal Reserve. It is an untenable situation, and there is nowhere for bonds to go but down. There is no possible feasible way that they will go up in value from here. So it is not a very reliable store of value at this point. The equities and the stock market, again, is overinflated because of this government stimulus that is coming, that is originating from the Fed. And that, again, is unsustainable in the long term. There is no underlying economic productivity to account for the upswing that we've seen in the Dow Jones and the S&P and other places like that. And unfortunately, we've just seen a very, very worrying signs for third quarter productivity and growth in the United States. In fact, one of the bleakest signals that we've seen in recent memory has just occurred regarding some recent polling data that came out about consumer sentiment in the third quarter. So we're starting to see that slowdown, and eventually that will work its way into the markets. I mean, the markets are still very much detached from economic reality, but again, there is no real way for the markets to come but down. So again, what is the only other asset class that can provide a store of value and that has provided a store of value for thousands of years? Well, we have to be looking at commodities, and I think specifically the precious metals. And there has been some interesting topsy-turvy movements in recent months that we've been documenting here. And even in the wake of this shutdown, this coming looming shutdown crisis, we're seeing gold doing some interesting things and not acting as the store of value that it has traditionally been. But I think in the long-term picture, I think that, it's where I'm putting our long-term savings for our family is into precious metals, because I really do think that's the only thing that's going to maintain its value throughout this crisis. And whatever they attempt to do with devaluing the U.S. dollar, I think that the precious metals is going to live beyond that.
All right, well, let's go to Bruce, who's calling us from Durand, Michigan. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Hi, Bruce. How are we doing?
Okay. There's a lot of talk on the shortwave and internet about a coming devaluation in the dollar this fall, actually. I know that Iran has wanted to get away from the dollar for a long time and may already be away from it. Now you say Turkey also wants a more stable currency.
Well, then not only Turkey, but apparently all of the countries over there. And
I'm wondering, does Saudi Arabia want that too? And if they say no more dollar tied to the price of oil, will that bring down the price of the dollar immediately? How soon is that going to happen?
Do you have any thoughts at all on that, James?
I certainly couldn't predict when and if Saudi Arabia is going to upset the apple cart with regards to the petrodollar, but I think you're right. When and if that happens, I think that that's really one of the only legs that are continuing to prop up the U.S. dollar as that world reserve currency, and that would be a significant move when and if that happens. But I think that the Saudi monarchy is very much in bed with the U.S. government establishment and vice versa, so that I don't know if there's anything that's going to drive that wedge in the near future between that relationship, but it is certainly possible, and I think you're right. When and if that happens, that's going to be one of the nails in the coffin of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve.
Bruce, let me just comment that Bill Still, I don't know if you know Bill, but I've known him for probably 20 years or more, and he's certainly one of the more astute observers. As with me, we've had differences in the past, but we've always been friends. And basically, he's going to be our guest on, actually, on Friday afternoon, the hour preceding this one. He's just back from Turkey, where he was invited by the president of Turkey to address this meeting, but it was primarily financial ministers from all over that part of the world, because certainly all of those countries, Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan and Turkmenistan, and they're all really worried certainly about this, what's going to happen, and they're looking for some sort of financial stability, because without financial stability, why, there is no stability. And Bill will be our expert, and we'll be open up to questions. So if you'd like to call in on Friday, perhaps he can give at least some estimate of what's going on. But he's a fascinating individual, and I'm glad to call him a friend. Anything else, Bruce?
I wonder if Mr. Corbett thinks the semi-rapprochement with Iran was from Iran's side, or was it from our side in the hopes of turning them to be less radical about the dollar?
Now, what specifically are we referring to, Bruce?
There is a rapprochement between... I just heard
the rapprochement supposedly between this new premier or president of Iran and his meeting with Barack Obama. Have any thoughts at all on that, James?
As to which side that this rapprochement originated from, well, I think both sides want to distance themselves from being the originator of this, because I think on both sides it doesn't play well politically. So I'm not sure if we'll ever exactly know the bottom of that story, but at any rate, it does fall in line with what Obama was saying that he wanted to accomplish with Iran when he came into office, that it was going to be about negotiation, etc. Well, we're starting to at least see the sign that that could be a possibility, however remote, but I'm not exactly holding my breath. Of course, we just saw Netanyahu come out today to basically say they have to threaten to continue and even increase sanctions on Iran and don't trust them, etc., etc. So I think that the dog's tail is going to be wagged from a completely different source once again. So I'm not exactly holding my breath that this rapprochement is actually going to take hold.
Bruce, we're just going to have to wait and see how this story unfolds. Anything else you'd like to ask?
Well, I just wondered if he thinks there's of all these rumors about the coming devaluation of the dollar, maybe by 50% within a couple of months, if they're just worried, or is there something behind it?
Well, I've heard those types of rumors now for going back several years, and there's even been times when specific dates have been attached to this and specific predictions, and every single time it has failed to come through true. So I'm not putting any stock or faith in that type of prediction. All I know is that when and if such an event happens, there will probably be no forewarning of it, and I don't think that we're going to be getting the signals from inside before that type of event happens. Could it happen? Certainly. Am I expecting it to happen in the near term? I don't see it on the near term horizon.
Bruce, I think they play games with our minds. They put out information all the time to get us feeling ill at ease. I've been at this for a long time. I can remember 50 years ago hearing the stories about the Chinese troops in Mexico suddenly being trained regularly and being ready to invade the southern part of California, and it never happened. So basically, whenever you hear all these rumors, remember that there are people out there putting out this information to confuse us. We'll just have to wait and see.
Can I ask another question?
Yes, you can, but before you do, let me just put out our telephone number once again. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we've got Bruce from Durham, Michigan. Go right ahead, Bruce.
Okay, a lot of talk about Obamacare here in the last few days, and I'm sure the next week will be a lot of talk about Obamacare. I wondered about Japanese health care. Is it the universal coverage, and is it fascist like they want here, where you either buy it or they throw you in jail, or is it like something the government lavishes on the Japanese?
It is a very similar situation to what you have, for example, in Canada or some of the other countries with socialized healthcare. It is a system where you either have to have it provided by an employer or you have to buy into the government provided healthcare plan. So that everyone does have healthcare insurance of one form or another here. And it is one of those situations where it is, of course, much, much cheaper here than it is in the United States. The United States continues to be the highest medical costs in the world. But that's exactly because the United States has that type of privatized slash government run system where exactly under Obamacare, which was written by the insurance companies, it's going to force people to buy insurance from the insurance companies. So surprise, surprise, they're going to make out like bandits as usual. So it is a sort of socialized universal healthcare system here, and everyone is part of the government system.
Has it hurt the Japanese economy in any way?
Only in the, I think, the long-term perspective of this, as we've been talking about, the more these types of benefits are given to the people, the more they become accustomed to them. And when and if the government has to cut back on them, it's going to cause more pain, and people will do anything to stop that from happening. So I think the long-term perspective, it does undermine the Japanese economy. But in terms of the political and economic debate that happens here, it's not even on the table. It's not even something that people really talk about in regards to that.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Bruce. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And what you best understand, ladies and gentlemen, is that some of the countries that are doing best in the world today, economically, are the countries which in the past have been hardline socialist people, places like Sweden and Norway and Finland. But basically, they found that socialism doesn't work. They can't afford it. And so they've had to cut back dramatically on a lot of their government programs. And basically, but you're not going to hear about that here in the United States. But because we're moving into the same failed government programs that certainly many of which have already been abandoned in Sweden and other countries. So understand, ladies and gentlemen, socialism is a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory. But in fact, it doesn't work, and eventually people have to pay for what they get. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question, our guest, of course, is James Corbett. And we're simply talking about the unfolding of the economic system today as we certainly, America, move from freedom towards fascism and towards certainly the control of every aspect of our lives. Well, James, certainly, what are your thoughts? What message would you like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, I think once again, the question du jour, the question of the week, the question of the month, the question of the year, the question of the decade, is once again the question of how do we get out of this mess? And I think that the answer to that is not going to come from the government. It is not going to come from Congress wrangling over the shutdown. It's not going to come from the Federal Reserve. It's not going to come from on high. It is going to come from the people deciding by and for themselves what to do with their money, their time, their efforts, their energies, who they want to interact with and in what ways. And again, it will come down to that. I think whatever type of system comes out of this, it will either be the system they try to impose from on high, or it will be a system of and by and for the people, the way that the U.S. supposedly was supposed to be about. So again, I think people have to be taking it back down to the local and community levels and cooperating amongst each other.
And what we need to do is limit the power of government so men could be free. A free economy works. A controlled economy doesn't. Just doesn't work. They're not that smart. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty with James Corbett. Well, we have Bob calling from Oklahoma. Hi, Bob. Do you have a question?
Yes, sir. I'm not hearing anything about the Federal Reserve 100-year trade year, whatever it is, ending in December. Could that be a design to do away with the dollar, just let the system end?
Okay, what is the current status on that, James? We hear all sorts of conflicting reports. Federal Reserve was created in 1913. It's now 2013. What is the official status of the Federal Reserve? They have a 100-year charter. Will anything happen, or is it going to just continue going on as it has?
It seems we get this question every week. Perhaps we should be announcing it every week, but there is no 100-year charter on the Federal Reserve. It will not end in December. The Federal Reserve Charter does not expire. It has been amended since it was first created, and there is no expiry date on the Federal Reserve. It will not expire unless Congress specifically passes a resolution canceling the Federal Reserve's charter. It will continue into the future indefinitely. It does not have to be renewed, and it will continue on because Congress is not doing anything about it. So the Federal Reserve is not going away. It is not going to disappear by itself. And I don't know why or how this rumor is continuing to be propagated, but it is not true. The Federal Reserve charter is not going to expire, and the Federal Reserve is not going to disappear on its own.
Okay, Bob, does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
God bless. Okay, fine. James, we're just about out of time. Parting thought, and then we'll let you go.
Well, once again, I just hope that people will look into alternative ways of participating in local economies, whether it's agorism or alternative currencies or local cooperatives or what have you, credit unions, those types of things, those institutions where we can put our money where it will be productive and helpful for the communities and the people around us and ourselves, rather than into this big behemoth system run by the big six banks and propagated and perpetuated by the banksters. So I think it's what we can take down to the local level and what we can do with our own hands and our own money in our own communities. And that's where the real solution to all of this lies, rather than giving all our energy and power and worries to the federal government, where they would love to have you concentrate all of your time and energy. And hopefully, if nothing else, if there is a government shutdown, hopefully it will just once again go to show that we do not need the federal government to be running every single aspect of our lives, and that perhaps we would be better off without it anyway.
God bless. Thanks so much. Our founding fathers would have agreed with you. Bye-bye. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.